Appeal number 21-1936, Secre Incorporated against the United States. Please proceed, Mr. Grayson.
Thank you very much, Your Honor. Secre versus the United States case involves an appellant who operates a workshop that hires the disabled in southeastern Kentucky, an area of high unemployment. Under the Javits-Wagner-O'Day Act, workshops like that are given sole source awards to perform whatever work they can work for the government once it's established that they're able to do that kind of work. In the case of Secre, Secre already is making for the government an item called the ATAP, the Advanced Tactical Panel. And the government has been buying from commercial sources a more primitive item called the TAP, the Tactical Panel. What's happened here is that although the JWAD Act, Javits-Wagner-O'Day Act, clearly and unequivocally states that items that are set aside for workshops can be made only by workshops, a federal agency, the Defense Logistics Agency, has decided to solicit commercial sources. And specifically what it did was it took an existing solicitation.
Counsel, let me ask you a question here. This is Judge Reyna. So Secre is a mandatory source, right, under the DWAD Act?
Yes.
Okay. So whenever, in these situations, whenever a need, a sourcing need arises, and it's subject to the JWOD Act, is there an actual bidding that occurs? Is there... Or, in other words, Secre here has no competitor. Is that right? Is it the only mandatory source?
Another workshop could bid on the same requirements, Your Honor, but no one other than a workshop could bid under law because the item's on a list called the procurement list, and DLA was required to check that procurement list. If it did check the list, it would have seen that Secre is on that list, and therefore it is the mandatory source.
Okay. I'm asking these questions as they relate to what is an interested party, which we have said that it's a person who's bidded or a prospective bidder. To what extent is Secre resolved of being categorized as a bidder or a prospective bidder due to its role under the JWOD Act?
There is a negotiation process that takes place between Secre and, for that matter, any workshop of the disabled and the agency, and that process involves Secre submitting what amounts to a bid or an offer. And
okay.
Secre did this when it got its initial contract, the contract that it's been performing for the ATAP, and Secre will do that if the court rules in its favor, and Secre is required. So Secre, in that sense, is both an actual bidder and a prospective bidder or offeror.
But they've never submitted a bid.
I would not say that. I think that what they said, what they submitted in order to get their current work was a bid or offer, as the term the statute uses, and they simply did not submit a bid or offer to the open procurement because they wouldn't be allowed to. I mean, I believe it's a small business set aside or something like that. They're not within the realm of bidders who are allowed to bid. So it would be an act of futility. It would be rejected because they're not a commercial entity.
Well, the government clearly states, I think, and I think it's not disputed, that they didn't submit a bid and that when they consulted with the advisor for this sort of activity, it was suggested that they submit a bid. So how is the government supposed to know that they're interested?
Because they're on the procurement list, that's how every agency knows whether someone is interested in, fact, the mandatory source. The agency is supposed to look at the procurement list, which is a website that is maintained by the federal agency, Ability One. By the way, I don't think it's true to say that they did not submit a bid here. If you look at appendix starting on page 1089, you'll see that they tried to get in touch with DLA, pointed out to DLA through Source America, their intermediary, that this is their stuff, and DLA just isn't interested. DLA proceeded regardless of whether they were on the list or not. It's a flagrant violation of the JWAD Act. But getting back to your original...
But that's not a bid, is it?
Yes,
contacting them and saying we're interested in the process. Hey, look at us. We're on the list. You guys should have contacted us. All of that, it's still not a bid.
I would not say that. I think in the context of the JWAD Act, it's a bid. Not only that, but they also have a prospective bid when they are actually found able to compete for obtain this requirement as a mandatory source. They will be submitting a bid or offer. They are, in that sense, a prospective bidder or offer. The statute that we're talking about here, 31 U.S.C. 3551A, says that an interested party means an actual or prospective bidder or offer. I don't know how anybody can possibly claim that Secretary is not a prospective bidder or offer.
If you thought there was an error, why didn't you submit a protest then?
Well, we did. In fact, this protest was submitted before award. It was not submitted before proposals were due, and the reason for that is that SECRE is not able to monitor every single federal competitive procurement, all 11 million of them each year, and then on top of that, review every amendment that it gets issued under each of those 11 million federal procurements. That's not what they do. They get their work from them as a mandatory source. They get it directly from Ability One and from Source America. And in this case, they happen to find out about it. That's reflected in the record. But it's not their responsibility or their capability. I mean, my goodness, they don't have to do this sort of thing to be able to physically monitor on a real-time basis all of the federal procurements that are announced by the government on the off chance that a solicitation or an amendment to a solicitation might have something to do with their work. That's expecting too much of a workshop. That's not what the JWAD Act requires them to do.
What efforts did you take to diligently pursue your rights after the communications in June 2020?
After the communications that you mentioned in the record in June 2020, the lawsuit was filed. And it was filed before award was made.
And that's everything, right? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, and under the applicable case law, that was enough. If you're alluding now to the blue and gold issue, I can move on to the blue and gold issue, but I want to make sure I've covered the territory with regard to jurisdiction here.
But I do want a little bit of certainty here. So I understood that Cirque filed 7 months after the close of bidding, but how much time occurred after the award was made? And you're saying that it filed its lawsuit at the Court of Claims before an award. Is that correct?
That's my understanding, yes.
Okay.
All right, so with regard to the jurisdictional issue, what it comes down to is that the Tucker Act says that a protest can be filed for any alleged violation of a statute or regulation in connection with a procurement or proposed procurement. This was clearly a protest that protests against an alleged violation of a statute or regulation, the JWAD Act, in connection with a procurement or proposed procurement, the acquisition of the ATAP items from commercial sources. So there's no doubt at all that this protest follows the definition under 28 U.S. Code 1491b1. The other question that comes up in this context is one that comes up because this court has imported a provision from the GAO's own statute, 31 U.S.C. 3551, which has to do with the definition of the term interested party. That's where the discussion comes up from the GAO's statute, where it says in this chapter, the term interested party means an actual or prospective bidder or offeror. And that's what I was addressing earlier, the GAO statutory definition of an interested party. You all will have to determine whether that even applies here, since this is not a GAO decision that you're reviewing. But in any event, that's the position. Secretary qualifies under the specific terms, and SECI also qualifies under the case law. This is just like the distributed solutions decision, 539 F3rd 1340. There was a request for information in that case. The protester submitted a response to a request for information. Nobody argued that the protester had submitted an actual bid or an actual offer. It was simply a response to a request for information. And Federal Circuit...
finish the thought.
Federal Circuit decided under 41 U.S.C. 403-2 that enough of that was appropriate to qualify as meeting the definition for interested party. Should I stop or should I go on to blue and gold?
Well, all right. If there's anything else you need to tell us, proceed.
Okay, thank you. With regard to blue and gold says that it applies when there's a patent ambiguity or patent error. There was no patent ambiguity or patent error in Amendment 6. What Amendment 6 was an end around to undermine the JWatt Act and the mandatory set-aside and SECI being a mandatory source. That's just not what the terms patent ambiguity and patent error apply to. The bidding process was not closed yet. A number of cases, including the Komen case and the Inserso case, focus on whether there was an award that was made. There was no award that was made at the time that SECRE filed its protest, and therefore, because no award has been made, Blue and Gold isn't even in the picture. SECRE was not doing the thing that Blue and Gold condemned. The thing that Blue and Gold condemned was an offeror who rolls the dice, waits to see if they receive the award, and then if unsuccessful, then claims that the solicitation wasn't firm. That's the problem that the court was trying to address in Blue and Gold. That's not the problem here because SECRE didn't hold back until after award was made.
But I gather SECRE has never actually submitted a formal bid. They're just complaining that they're the mandatory source. Is that right?
No, Your Honor, I wouldn't agree to that. I think that a fair reading of Appendix 1089 and the ensuing emails is SECRE trying to submit a bid. And in addition to that, SECRE has submitted a bid because it has actually won an award for the ATAB. It could not have...
But not this procurement, is that right?
Well, I'm not sure you can distinguish between the two. The award that was given to them was for the exact same item as the award that's being procured. So it seems almost like a metaphysical distinction to say that one was, quote, for this item and the other one wasn't for the item.
What was the reason given by the agency that it was not going to extend the contract to SERCI?
The DLA has a very controversial policy that just because the JWatt Act makes a mandatory source when other agencies do the work, that doesn't mean they apply to them. We think that that's wrong. We think it's directly contrary to the statute. But what happened here is that SECRE had gotten its award from the Army. The Defense Logistics Agency is a different agency inside the Department of Defense. And DLA takes the position that a set-aside for the Army is not a set-aside for them. We think that's wrong, and we look forward to proving that in the courtroom.
Yeah. Okay. Let's hear from the government, and we'll save you rebuttal time.
That's very kind, Your Honor. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Anderson.
Good morning. May it please the court. I want to touch on the blue and gold. That's what I have prepared. But I do want to answer your questions, Judge Newman and Judge Reyna, your questions about the mandatory source. So
let me start with this question, okay? It seems to me, just reading the DWOD Act and the briefs and trying to follow the process, now I may have gotten something wrong, but it seems to me that SERCI is a mandatory source for a particular item. That item comes up as a need by a particular agency, and the law requires, it mandates that SERCI be the source for that procurement. Am I correct so far?
Not necessarily, Your Honor. So the way that this works is the procurement list has three different levels. There's an A, there's a B, there's a C. And actually what SECRE is the C-list item. So what that means is there's a mandatory source supplier, and they are the ATAP supplier. However, it's only for a certain contracting activity, and that is the U.S. Army NATIC, which is the training facility in Aberdeen. And let me explain to you why that's set up that way. So in Aberdeen, what they do is they try...
I'm not interested in things that are really off the record here, but you've offered some clarification, and that is that that SERCE was a mandatory source for the ATAP. Now you're going to argue, yes, you're right, Judge, but it was only for a particular agency and not for any procurement sought by the DLA.
That is correct, Your Honor. That is why they didn't come to SECRE. Because when an item moves from training to field, that is why they're not on the mandatory list. So SECRE has the ability to perform in an experimental way, but not in for the whole United States Army, and that is why they are a C-list item and not an A or B-list, which is mean that everybody has to buy it from them.
Is there any other company listed as a source for ATAP on the A or B list, as you put it?
There is not, Your Honor. And this is actually...
Okay, so the only source for ATAP here, in the as far as we're concerned with the JWOD Act, is SERCE. And, correct?
But only for NATIC, though. Only for NATIC. If NATIC wants to buy the ATAP, they have to go to SECRE. If the Navy wants to buy it, if the Marines want to buy it, if anybody else wants to buy it, they can go all sources. That's the difference. I just want to really stress that point, that they are not a mandatory
And who's
source.
Buying it in this case?
The United States, DLA is buying it. So Defense
that's,
Logistics
That's
the
United States, right?
But it's a different agency, it's DLA.
But does it represent all the branches of the service?
No, not for this procurement. It does not, no.
The Army, isn't it?
It's still...
No, it is not. No, so under the Federal Register, and this Federal Register notice is actually posted, it's 84 Federal Register number 61, all right, published March 29, 2019. The mandatory source is SECRE, but only for the NATIC. So it's a division of the Army, which is a mandatory contracting activity. So say, for instance, the Army Reserve wanted to buy the ATAP. They wouldn't be restricted to SECRE. It's only the experimental group that's in Aberdeen. So that is why your question, Judge Rayner, was absolutely on point. You wanted to know why didn't they come to SECRE first. And that's the reason, is because they're not the mandatory source supplier for the ATAP for anything other than NATIC. That is the bottom
Army.
Line.
The Army, right?
NATIC Army, correct. So obviously inside the Army there are a number of different, you know, sub-agencies and different contracting activities.
That seems contrary to the entire statute, which is quite broad and intentionally so, and it doesn't say that part of the government is bound by this act of Congress, but part of the government is not bound by it.
Not necessarily, Your Honor, and the reason why is that the list has the ability to differentiate how the items are procured. So ability one has created, this is another Federal Register site, 71 Federal Register 69536, which was produced on December 1st, 2006. That is the one that actually explains the differences between the different lists. And the C list, and I'll read from the Federal Register, says the third category, the C list, contains specialized or niche products that are most often designed and manufactured to meet the needs of a single federal agency. there are no JWAT Act provisions that are mandatory for the C list. So that is why DLA did not go to FECRI and say you are automatically the sole source provider. Because normally the way that it works is if an agency is required, such as NATIC, they go directly to Source America and they say, we want to work with FECRI to buy these number of ATAPs, and then the contracting process begins. But when you're not required to do that, then you go out and you have the other vehicles, such as the all sources. So that is what I wanted to add.
Has the government actually awarded the solicitation in this case?
They have not, Your Honor. They are, in fact, reviewing the various bids as we speak. I just checked on Friday.
Various bids. Has FECRI submitted a bid?
No, they have not. They have not done anything, Your Honor, other than file a complaint 6 months after they had knowledge that they weren't going to get the sole source in this matter. And even if they did, Your Honor, even if they did, they couldn't fulfill the contract as written. The U.S. Army, or DLA, let me say, is going to order these ATAP. Let me explain. An ATAP are the little pockets.
Were these arguments made before the Court of Federal Claims?
It was not, Your Honor, because it was a fast-moving process, and we didn't have all of the facts about the C list available. This is one of the few cases that we've had where we went into the C list. Most people in our office didn't know about it. Most people were under the impression that you had, Your Honor, that you had to buy from it if you were on the list. But this is separate because we kept asking the question, why didn't you go to FECRI? And they answered it by saying, we didn't have to.
Let me make clear. These arguments were not made at the Court of Federal Claims?
That is correct, Your Honor. That is correct. But it is in the Federal Register, so that's why I gave you the site, so that you could take judicial notice of the fact that FECRI is not the mandatory source of.
Well, we can read the notice, but you know we're not going to make your argument for you.
Sure.
And you didn't make the argument at the Court of Federal Claims. You didn't.
Well,
did you? Was CERCI ever informed that they were a C-list company and that therefore, they would never qualify as a bidder for the ATAP procurement?
I cannot say affirmatively, other than it's in the Federal Register, and everyone is presumed to have notice of that.
And then one other question: the arguments that you're making that you did not make at the Court of Federal Claims, you also did make those in your brief, correct?
That is correct, Your Honor. That is correct.
So,
again,
you know, you wanted to argue blue and gold, and that's a waiver case. It seems to me that if there's waiver involved here, it's in your camp.
Can you repeat that last sentence, Your Honor?
You should have made these arguments before the Court of Federal Claims, and you should have briefed them.
I would suggest so, Your Honor. However, this is also a clear blue and gold violation. So we feel very confident that the court got it right below about FECRI waiving its right to challenge the solicitation because they didn't do anything as Judge Cunningham.
I'm not nearly as confident as you are, Mr. Counselor. So let's move on to something else here.
Move on to our blue and gold, or you still want to refer to the mandatory source piece?
Whatever you feel we need to give primary attention to point it out.
Okay, so we'll move on from the mandatory source to the blue and gold. So as this court is aware, when there's a patent error in the solicitation, an entity has a duty to challenge that solicitation prior to the close of the solicitation. And
Counselor, doesn't blue and gold really, it's progeny, it's the cases after that, say that any type of protest that's going to be filed by a bidder has to be filed before the award is made?
Not necessarily, Your Honor. The Coleman case talks about how you can file it before an award. However, that only takes place if you are unable to challenge the solicitation prior to the close date. That is not the facts that we have here. They, in fact, knew 7 days after. So on June 10th, they were that, in fact, they would not be getting the sole source. And they talked to Source America about this. This is on appendix page 59 and 60. You'll see where there's the email. And what Source America recommended to them was that they respond to the solicitation. SECRE didn't file a GAO protest. They didn't file an agency protest. In fact, they did nothing prior to October 7th, 2020, which was the close date. The thing that they did do, Your Honor, was that they filed this complaint, as the SECRE's counsel mentioned, in January, 6 months after they knew that they were not going to be the mandatory source. This is exactly why Blue and Gold was created. You have to do something to preserve the challenge. They did not do that. In a decision that was made by this court just a little over a month ago in Harmonia, this court said an agency protest is enough to get around Blue and Gold. In Bannum, same situation. A protest during the solicitation period is enough. The whole idea here is to preserve your challenge to the solicitation.
Yes, in Harmonia we said it's enough if it's made before the award is given.
But that was a situation where they didn't have the knowledge that they have here. All of the cases that deal with before the award is when you don't know. SECRE was aware. They had the full and present ability to challenge, and they decided not to. The only reason that the award was not issued earlier is because we held it up pending this case. It's not as a result of something else. So the thing is that they were aware of it, and that is what classic Blue and Gold is. That is what B3 is all about. That is about expeditious resolution of the case for national interest and national security reasons, which is exactly what this one is really about. We have flak jackets. And our soldiers have to have flak jackets. We can't hold that up. And if there's a challenge that you're aware of and you believe that there's some irregularity, then you have an affirmative duty, whether you are a nonprofit under JWAD Act or not. You have to say something so that the agency has the full and fair opportunity to resolve the matter as soon as possible.
I believe that Cirque through its messaging nonprofit organization, First Source or something like that, I believe that they notify the DLA that what's going on here, you know, and they question the fact that the CERCI was enlisted as a mandatory source, and that happened in June. And let's see here. Yes, June 10th to 25, Source America emailed DLA regarding the solicitation of Cirque's, on Cirque's behalf. And they explained that Cirque was designated as a required source of ATAP. And then it seems to me that DLA declined and instead opted to procure it from somebody else. What was the full response that the DLA gave Cirque in regards to the concerns and comments they made in June 10th and 25 of 2020?
First of all, they didn't have to go through CERCI because they were CLIT.
What was their response to CERCI's concerns that it voiced through Source America?
They told Source America, who's not a proxy for a bid, by the way, but they told Source America that they were going to go all sources with this solicitation.
And where is that in the record?
That is 59 and 60. Let me see here. Page 59 is when they recommended that they go through that they respond to the solicitation. And if you look at page 60, Your Honor, it is the email from Mark Twarzik to Dillis Benjamin. It says that Mr. Benjamin, to meet the Army's requirements, DLA is purchasing the ATAP in a full and open, unrestricted solicitation and gives the number.
Why is that not indicative of a protest made by Cirque to the administering agency?
That's a very good question, Your Honor. They do not have the legal authority or responsibility to advance protests on behalf of the nonprofits. They are simply a logistical middle person. I just spoke with the council again last week to assure the court of that. They have no responsibility for bid protest. So if there's going to be a bid
That may be true, but they did relay the message just as they're supposed to. Source America did email DLA about the solicitation on Cirque's behalf.
But, Your Honor, just as in Inserso, right, you have to actually submit a challenge. Just like with Inserso, where they were just unhappy with something, and this court said that's not enough. You have to challenge it. You have to tell the agency. You have to file with DLA or with GAO. You have to do something. And here,
they filed suit?
Well, filing suit is not enough to preserve that challenge, Your Honor. They didn't file suit prior to the expiration of the solicitation. Perhaps if they filed suit prior to October 7th, we would have a different set of facts.
They filed suit prior to the award being made. The award has yet to be made. So under Harmonia, it seems to me that they preserved their arguments by doing that.
They have not done so, however, because it's about the knowledge piece. They had knowledge and the full and present ability to challenge prior. Simply because you have that knowledge and waiting and being dilatory until after does not get around the blue and gold rule. Blue and gold is the whole idea is to preserve that challenge when you know during the time period. And the Harmonia reinforced that point as well. If you notice in Harmonia, they filed an agency protest before the close of bid. Before the close of bid. That's what's so important.
What made the difference is that the protest was filed before the award was made. It was a pre-award protest. That's Harmonia.
Correct. But Harmonia, there was an agency protest first. That agency protest is what makes it key. Here, there's a case filed. However, it's 6 months after knowledge and roughly 3 months after the deadline for the solicitation. That is what is absolutely key. That is what brings you within the goal and within the parameters of going goal. As we all know, Your Honor, it's a very low bar, right? The court is saying you have to do something prior to filing suit to preserve that challenge, or else the procurement process is going to move on, and you're going to have the agencies incur all of this additional waste and going through the process when that could have been resolved right away. If Secretary had said any time between June 10th and October 7th, hey, raise their hand directly. We're the ones that should be getting this this procurement, not anyone else. But Secretary didn't do so. They didn't do anything, Your Honor, until January of 2021. And they cannot even meet the low bar standard that Blue and Gold puts out there. And that is why this is considered a classic down the middle Blue and Gold issue of waivers.
Do you know as a fact that there were no communications in that six-month period, that, in fact, they did absolutely nothing, paid no attention? Or is it equally possible, if not likely, that Secretary was contacting whoever it was they work with in this procurement on the part of the government to to learn more about what was going on?
I can tell you from the DLA perspective and from the Ability One perspective, Your Honor, no, there were no communications at all about this solicitation. And so with that being the case, that is that's why I keep reiterating, that's down the middle of what Blue and Gold is all about. It's all about trying to let the agency know right away that there is some irregularity with the solicitation, and SECRE has just failed to do so.
And so you contend that the June emails are not sufficient to preserve the claims, right? Isn't that part of your contention?
That is absolutely correct, Your Honor. There is no responsibility or authority under statute or any other or anything else that the central nonprofit operates as a proxy for as a bid protest. Not at all. It doesn't have any of those responsibilities. The only thing it is a logistics support. So they help with negotiations and things of that sort.
But that's not the issue. The issue is whether DLA was informed about SECRE's interest. That is yes. And as you said, as you argued, and this is one thing I do agree with you, is that the bar is low in terms of the type of notice that a bidder must provide to the contracting agency as with respect to concerns in it that it has on the solicitation process.
Yes, Your Honor, in terms of, I heard the one piece about the bar being low, but was DLA aware of a protest? I would suggest no, Your Honor. There was no protest to the award that came to DLA or to Source America, to DLA at all. They had no idea. There were some emails that went with Source America back and forth, but none of that would rise to that of a bid protest where you would even have constructive knowledge. It wasn't as if Source America says, hey, you're violating the JWAD Act by doing this. It wasn't that strong, nor was there anything from SECRE saying that, hey, you're violating the JWAD Act by not giving us the bid. And the reason why, Your Honor, is because they know that they weren't the mandatory source. It's right here.
I have a final question here, for my part anyway. And that is, what's your legal authority that says that informal challenges are insufficient to preserve an argument?
Well, I can say this, Your Honor. In Inserso, right, there was some unhappiness from Inserso to the contracting officer, and this court said that's not enough. You got to lodge a protest. So I see this along the
Where in Inserso does it says you have to file a formal protest?
It does not say that, Your Honor. What the court said was it's not enough to be unhappy. And as far as DLA
That's not what I asked you. I asked you, give me a legal authority that stands for the proposition that informal challenges are insufficient.
I don't have any informal challenge legal authority at this point in time, Your Honor. I can only use the previous cases as an analogous situation. But they didn't even have that, is what I'm saying, Your Honor. Even in the best light, it wasn't an informal challenge. SECRE never said anything to DLA.
One moment. This is Michael Ames, the courtroom deputy. It looks like we have lost Judge Newman. Give me one moment. I will reconnect her.
And Mr. Anderson, again, you were in the middle. I don't know what went wrong, but it's happened before. So please finish your thought.
Not a problem, Your Honor. Judge Reyna had asked, was there any authority that this court has come out with about whether an informal challenge would suffice for a bid protest? And what I was responding to his question about is, there is no authority other than, as I said, in the Inserso case where unhappiness was expressed and this court said it wasn't enough. But furthermore, there wasn't even constructive knowledge by DLA that SECRE was trying to file a bid protest. Even in looking at those emails, there's nothing that anyone could say from DLA that could even be construed as
how,
a bid protest.
How can that be the case if DLA is putting out a bid for TAP? Doesn't it run its finger down this list that you bring up for the first time on appeal and see, do we have anybody on the A list? Do we have anybody on the B list? Do we have anybody on the C list? They don't even do that?
Yes, they do, Your Honor. Absolutely.
Well, how are you arguing that there's no constructive knowledge? If anything, there's constructive knowledge that Cirque was on the list for the very product that's being sourced.
But when you're looking,
DLA should have known. DLA should have known. It should have looked. It should have known. And it should have looked at the act and said, do they apply? And if the answer is no, then they should have informed Cirque.
There's no affirmative duty to do that last part, Your Honor. They did go down the list and see that SECRE is not the mandatory source for the DLA procurement. They go down the list to make sure that they don't violate the JWAD Act, and that is why they did not have to do any of the sole sourcing in this matter. It's very clear, right? If you're on the list, you see the name, the mandatory contracting authority. If your name is the mandatory contracting authority, you have to then proceed to contact one of the central nonprofits. But when you go down this list, you see it says U.S. Army NATIC. Well, that's not me, so I don't have to do that. So there is, and then there's no pushback. Going back to your question, Judge, there's no pushback from SECRE raising their hand and saying, hey, we believe that we are the mandatory source for this ATAP. There was none of that. And because of that, Your Honor, you can't, there's no actual knowledge, and there's no innuendo, there's no anything else that you could construe to say, hey, is SECRE really upset? Because there was no communication of that sort. And again, Source America, even in looking at those arguments, you couldn't construe it that way. But SECRE has an affirmative duty, Your Honor, as we talked about with Blue and Gold. If there's a patent error, right, and this has been reiterated in all the progeny, as you mentioned, if there's a patent error, you have to do something to preserve your situation, as in Bantam and Harmonia. It's simply not done. And because of that, Your Honor, they have waived their challenge. And as we put in the brief, as this court has held in Par Adlef, when a Blue and Gold violation is found, the case must be dismissed because waiver is found. That's as plain English as I can say it.
Do you believe that you can win even without a finding of Blue and Gold waiver? And if so, just tell me your reasoning.
So we believe that we can win, and Judge Reyna is very astute in pointing this out, that we did not brief the mandatory source matters. However, as you know, jurisdictions never wait. And we believe because they're not a mandatory source that we can definitely win on that side as well. So Blue and Gold, obvious to us as a winner, as I've explained. And then, Your Honor, as you spoke with, as you asked, we also believe that with them not being a mandatory source, that they don't have standing actually to bring this case.
Okay. Any more questions for Mr. Anderson? Okay. We'll ask them of Mr. Grayson.
Thank you very much, Your Honor. Let me read to you from the DGR Associates decision. It says a party must do something. Party must do something before the closing date to preserve its rights and must therefore pursue its position in a timely manner. So the question before this panel is, did SECRE do something? I think the answer is obviously yes. You all asked before about whether there's any sort of guidance about in the law about what's enough. I would refer the court to the executive order 12979, October 25th, 1995, was not cited in the briefs because I didn't expect the matter to unfold this way, but the executive order from the president says that an agency-level protest is basically anything. I'm only slightly exaggerating. It's anything. It's supposed to be informal. And that comports with the court's own rule that in order to give notice to the agency and fulfill the responsibility of Honor Blue and Gold, you just have to do something. It's also consistent with Judge Reyna's decision in the Bernie case. Judge Reyna was on the panel in the Bernie case, in which that case, along with many other cases that Judge Reyna mentioned, indicates that the bidding process closes when award was made. In this case, not only did you have Secri and Source America complaining directly to DLA about this long before award was made, but you had this actual lawsuit being brought before award was made. So we have a twofer here. Not only was this satisfied once, the requirement was satisfied twice. And this argument about 6 months passing is essentially a latches argument. When there is a latches argument, it's incumbent upon the government to show prejudice. The government hasn't even argued it as a latches argument in its briefs, but if it did, it would run into a problem because there has been no prejudice to the government. And as to whether there was good cause to excuse any delay, we laid that out in our brief quite clearly. The good cause to excuse the delay was that Secri went to Source America, which, by the way, does have the responsibility to act as the intermediary between Secri and the agency, including for bid protests, and that comes directly out of the statute. That's 4SB Section 8503C. So contrary to my friend at DOJ, that part of the argument is simply mistaken. There is that responsibility. Secondly, the second good cause was that it's not Secretary's responsibility to monitor all events in government procurements nationwide among the 11 million procurement actions the government has taken every year. The Secretary has a different job, which is to make these items that are set aside on the procurement list for it. With regard to what's on the procurement list, I think that the counsel for DOJ simply doesn't understand the statutory scheme as set forth in the words of the statute. 41 U.S.C. 8504, as Judge Newman referred to earlier, says an entity of the federal government, that's an entity of the federal government, any entity of the federal government, intending to procure a product or service on the procurement list, no one doubts this is on the procurement list, referred to in Section 8503.
Sorry, one moment. This is Michael Ames again. It looks like we have Mr. Anderson, who dropped this time. Give me one moment. I will reconnect him.
Okay, we're continuing with Secri against the United States in rebuttal. Mr. Grayson.
Thank you, Your Honor. And continuing along the lines that you all, and specifically Judge Newman, indicated earlier, if you look at the J-1 Act, specifically 41 U.S.C. Section 8504A, it says, an entity of the federal government intending to procure a product or service on the procurement list, which this is, referred to in Section 8503 of this title, shall procure the product or service from a qualified nonprofit agency for the blind or a qualified nonprofit agency for other severely disabled, which is Secri, in accordance with the regulations in the committee and at the price the committee establishes if the product or service is available within the period required by the entity. Not only does this statute say that the set-aside is government-wide, the mandatory source is government-wide, but the regulations promulgated under it, both the Federal Acquisition Regulation and the Ability 1 regulations, both say this specifically applies to DLA, which is the agency at issue here in this case. So I don't think there's any room for the government to argue that it would win on the merits of this case if the case were remanded in that thing. Regarding the issue, going back to the issue of blue and gold, there is no means to argue that blue and gold has not been satisfied here for two additional reasons. One additional reason is that the court can now, if it wants to reach the issue that it decided not to reach in the Boeing case, the Javits-Wagner-O'Day Act is clearly an act that was created to protect workshops. It's a remedial act. And in the Boeing case, the court reserved for itself the issue of whether the blue and gold notice provisions apply to a remedial act like this one. Secondly, Judge Rayna's dissent in Inserso raises the important and potentially crucial issue here of whether there can be a judicially created time bar after the Supreme Court's decision in FCA Hygiene Products, 137 Supreme Court 954. In other words, the Supreme Court says, no, the six-year statute of limitations that governs bid protests before this court is the only limitation that governs bid protests before this court, and Judge Rayna laid out the argument for that quite clearly in the Inserso dissent. So for these reasons, particularly the reasons that there was actually a protest, as that term is used in the executive order and as that term is used in general, to the agency before bids were due, and that there was a lawsuit, this lawsuit filed here on appeal now, that was filed, as Judge Rayna points out, before award was made, Blue and Gold is simply out of the picture here.
Okay, any more questions for Ms. Grayson?
Do you have any final response on the standing issue?
If I may ask, on the standing issue, are you referring to whether there was a requirement for a bid or not? Is that what Your Honor means by that?
I was just talking in response to, I don't know if you heard, I hopefully did hear, counsel made an argument in response to my question about how else could you win if we find no Blue and Gold waiver. He then responded, and I was wondering if you had any response to it. If you have no response, that's fine too.
I would not call that a standing issue at all. That's not the way that the Tucker Act is structured. It's not a question of standing. What we're arguing about, and if I misunderstood his answer, then I apologize, but we're arguing squarely that the fourth prong of the Tucker Act applies here, that there's been an alleged violation of a statute or regulation, specifically the JWAD Act, in connection with the procurement, specifically the procurement of the APAP items. So there's no doubt that we have, quote, standing under the Tucker Act. We literally do. I hope that answers your question, Your Honor. I'm definitely trying to.
Okay, Judge Cunningham?
Nothing further.
Any more questions, Judge Rayna?
No, thank you. Thank you,
okay.
Judge.
All right, good. All right, thanks to counsel. The case is taken under submission.
Your Honor, I would just like to add one piece.
Okay.
If the court would like supplemental briefing on the mandatory source in the C list, we'd be happy to provide that information to the court.
What do you think, Judge Rayna?
I think that issue's been waived.
I think we'll talk about the case, and if we think we need additional briefing, we'll let everybody know. Thank you for mentioning it. Okay.
Thank you, Ron.
Anything else?
I want to thank the court for its patience and all the additional time that you gave me.
Okay. Thank you. All right, so that concludes this panel's arguments for this morning, this afternoon.
Thank you.
The Honorable Court is adjourned until tomorrow morning at 10 a.m.